From the News Talk STL studios in St. Louis, it's the Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. On tonight's episode, we recap this week's Republican debate with political trivia genius Rich Rubino. And then we'll do some conjuring with ghost hunter Rick McKelvey. Also, Kirby Newberry, the king of coffee from DiscountCoffee.com, and the Right Mind studio band Mitch Murphy and the Murphy Tones. Now, putting the fun in your dysfunctional world, here's your host, Todd Showalter.
Oh, just made it in. How you doing, Joey?
Oh, wonderful.
Here, I've been working up a sweat. I'm all good.
Okay. They call this, I believe, a second Indian summer. An Indian summer, I think, is when it gets cold and then hot again. We've gone cold, hot again, so glad to have you.
You can't say Indian anymore. I think you're supposed to say, like, what are you supposed to say? Eskimo? No, you can't do that
either. An Eskimo summer? That makes more sense.
An Eskimo summer. Yes, that's exactly what it is. We're having an Eskimo summer. And everybody's complaining here at the station that, oh, it's so hot in here. So I'm freezing. What's going on?
Is it me? Something wrong with the HVAC. It's a room-by-room basis. I think we have ourselves a Bruce Willis stuck in one of the channels, the chimneys, the chutes.
I think
And he's
right.
just blocking it up.
I think so. He's not doing too well, by the way.
I think that's how he got lost.
I think so, too. Yeah, but at least he's cool. He's blocking all the air for everybody else, although we're staying cool. Yeah, I'm glad that our buddy Rich Rubino's coming on.
Me too.
Did you? I know because he makes us look good. But you know, he's. Did you watch that debate Wednesday night?
I did not watch it. I was actually at a concert, very heavy metal, awesome concert. And instead of watching this very boring debate,
well, let's skip over the debate because you were talking about that concert. You said it was like a metal cartoon concert. Now, what the heck is that all about?
I was down at the casino. Hollywood Casino has a little venue, about 4,000-seater in the parking lot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One is a cartoon. It's Metalocalypse on Adult Swim, and the band is Death Clock. And I was like, "What
Death
does a,
Clock?
Yeah, Death Clock. What does a
I'm
going to cartoon...
name my dog that?
You should.
Come here, Death Clock.
What does a cartoon band look like live? You know, I've heard of the Monkees, right? I think they were kind of
the
cartoon.
Monkees.
I've heard. Of
I don't
the...
think you can say that anymore.
I've
either.
Heard of the Gorillaz.
Gorillaz, okay.
But then I had never seen a cartoon band perform live.
Now, let's just stop right here because you've lost me. Now wait a minute. See, because I draw cartoons. I mean,
you draw cartoons.
People
yes.
actually pay me to draw cartoons. It's you know, a good gig if you can get it. But you say you watch cartoons sing and they're metal.
They had the actual band in darkness, shaded in darkness, and then a giant screen behind them of the band playing, like, along to the musicians.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it like Garfield or something like that?
No, it was what you would picture for, like, a Swedish heavy metal
Swedish?
Band.
Yes. We should talk Swedish today, but I interrupted. Go ahead. So you're watching...
Long hair, headbanging, hair twirling, all on the screen, lots of death metal gore.
Death metal, yeah. You made memories, and you got to watch cartoons sing.
And content. That content is king. The only reason I go to these silly things so I can talk about them on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a good one, too. Because, you know, it was better than the debate because we started talking about that. And I guarantee you that debate Wednesday night was...
Was there a circle pit at the debate? Are you familiar with that?
A circle
so
pit?
So mosh pit is just kind of people banging against
each
other.
I think there was.
But a circle pit is when just a whole bunch of people start going in a circle and banging into each other. It's a sight to behold.
Wow. That would have really been a lot more entertaining because these guys, I mean, Nikki Haley, you know what it reminded me of? This whole debate, it reminded me of like my family during the holidays when they all get together. I mean, the only thing they missed was, you know, some drunk people and people crying, you know, because besides that, it was basically the holidays at one of my family's
I think
parties.
Vivek is a tennis player. I always picture he's got the racket ready to bean someone with, like Jim Cornette from wrestling.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He could just come out, get in that circle pit, and start bashing people if he gets out of line.
Vivek is the Indian, but not like the Indian summer that we were talking about.
It might be, actually, the same thing. It is the summer of Vivek. It could be an Indian summer.
The summer of Vivek.
He keeps coming back. Yeah,
he's not like an Indian that has, like, a headdress and stuff like that. He's kind of like an Indian from the country, like the AT&T, like when you call up customer service.
Don't
like,
do the accent.
Don't do it?
I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
Apu got canceled, and that's a cartoon.
Who did?
Apu from The Simpsons. Ramaswamy is his last name, so I think I can't even tell.
I'm not going to do it, sir.
Oh, he did.
That was not. Anyway, you know what?
Good but, Scottish Sean Connery. Thank you.
I do my Scottish Sean Connery. You want to hear it? This is it. Watch it. So you think you're a soccer player, Mr. Joy. Wasn't that good?
More offensive than the Indian.
It sounded like, you know, James Bond was right here. But let's get back to the debate, shall we? Because it was total mayhem. It was everybody screaming at each other and yelling. They should have been throwing things. I mean, that would have been a lot. I don't know. That really would have been the topper. It was total confusion. I didn't know what the heck was going on.
I know, and it took place at the Ronald Reagan Museum in Simi Valley, California, and they have an actual airplane in that building. They have the real Air Force One that Reagan flew on. I'm thinking they're huffing gasoline fumes or something in there, and people are getting wild.
And that's not good for the environment. Mm. All this green stuff. Wow, and they have a giant airplane hanging over their head, which I think should have just fallen. That would have made the whole debate a lot more enjoyable, I think, for all of us. If the whole plane had just broken off the ceiling and fallen, because all they would do is they're screaming. Everybody's screaming. Everybody's yelling, screaming. And these moderators, I don't know where they got them. I think they were working part time at, like, you know, the donut shop or something.
Isn't there
like
three moderators? How do the moderators moderate themselves? Who watches the watchmen?
I think that they looked for the worst of the worst. I mean, I said, you know, who are our three worst moderators that we could get? And that's who they got. Yeah. And they went up there. And then I think I was mentioning to you earlier, but Vivek, the Indian who's not an Indian, but is also an Indian, we're trying to figure that out. He's got like this evangelist type of cadence with his voice or something like that.
He doesn't come off as real.
No, he doesn't. And then it's like, because there used to be people like these healers, that mm-hmm. and you are healed, and things like that. And that's like how he talks. It's like, and in America. And I'm like, and he's got this up and down type of singing song thing. And I'm like, why is he doing that? I think if you put him and Kamala Harris together, their voices would like be such torture. I certainly hope they don't run together. Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, they got into a little battle of words. It was like a cat fight. Meow. That's exactly what it was.
And it was over curtains, too, and my cat hates curtains.
It was over curtains.
He was accusing her of spending $50,000 on curtains with taxpayer money, and my cat would not care how much a curtain costs.
Not a darn bit. Certainly wouldn't. Well, I'm glad that Rich Rubino's coming on to tell us what he thought about this, because he certainly has all the answers. Now on the line with us, when it comes to politics, this guy knows it all. My buddy Rich Rubino, our official Right Mind political analyst. How's it going, Rich? And what did you think of Wednesday's debate?
Yeah, doing well. It was actually probably more entertaining than the first one. I think the gloves were somewhat off this time. You certainly saw some of the candidates willing to take at least minor swings at Donald Trump. Chris Christie was the only one who I think took some major swings at one point, saying, you know, you're not here because you're a coward. But the other candidates, I think, took him on policy. For example, the national debt increasing during his term. You saw Nikki Haley take that on. You also see our folks like Tim Scott trying to kind of defend the fact that he'd been in Washington since 2013. That was something that Nikki Haley had kind of gone after, saying he was a creature of Washington. But the interesting part, I thought, was really the confrontation between Tim Scott and Nikki Haley. There's a little bit of history here. Nikki Haley actually appointed Tim Scott, so his predecessor, Jim DeMint, resigned midterm. So Nikki Haley was governor, and there were a litany of people who were potential successors. And she chose Tim Scott to the United States Senate back in 2013, so she's really responsible for his proliferation. But Tim Scott kind of went after her, saying that when she was governor, she had supported increases in the gas tax, and that when she was UN ambassador, she had supported a $50,000 curtain fee, which was kind of an interesting issue. And Nikki Haley said, kind of bring it on. But it was really kind of a Southern, the battle of two Southerners, I guess. But it was an interesting confrontation, but the bottom line, though, is any candidate, in order to actually be at the same level of Donald Trump, any candidate needs a complete knockout and needs to get to that level. And I don't see any candidate near that level at this point in time.
No, and also going back to the Nikki Haley situation, I mean, it almost got to be it was like a cat fight. I mean, they were really going at it. And apparently, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole Drape situation, that's been debunked. It never really even happened that she didn't even purchase these drapes, and they were bought for her or something, and either Tim Scott didn't know that, or if he did, he was lying about it. So, I mean, are you aware of that?
No, and I thought, even if it, let's say everything is categorically true about that with Nikki Haley, of all the issues Tim Scott could have taken her on for, it just seems like an issue. I mean, is there actually going to be a voter out there that says, well, I was really thinking about voting for Nikki Haley, but there are those 15,000 drapes, therefore I'm going to vote for Tim Scott? It just seemed, I don't think that's one voter. It seemed the most juvenile. It's almost like, is that all you got in some respects? But what it did tell me about Tim Scott is that he sees Nikki Haley as a threat. He wants, they both essentially want to be kind of somewhat the establishment alternative, if you will, to Donald Trump. I think Tim Scott sees his message as optimistic. He sees himself going back to the Reagan era when he talks about the shining city on a hill, and he sees Nikki Haley as the one person who's kind of a threat to that. But as I say, I think it probably, there are probably other issues that he could have, and certainly as his opposition research could have chosen to go after her on. Now the gas tax issue, that is, it's kind of murky what she actually essentially supported when she was governor of that. But she had a very good defense against Tim Scott in that respect. But it's interesting that they're kind of going after each other because, as I say, you know, Tim Scott and Nikki Haley were once allies. And the other fascinating thing about this. So South Carolina is an early state, but polls right now are showing Donald Trump with an insurmountable lead in the state of South Carolina. And I think that it's probably Tim Scott's hope that if he can come in second or third in South Carolina after having a respectable showing in Iowa and New Hampshire, that potentially he could be the one alternative to Donald Trump. It reminds me a little bit of in 2016 when Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio were both running for the nomination, and Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio were once allies. Jeb Bush was governor. Marco Rubio was Speaker of the House in Florida. Jeb Bush was almost a mentor to Marco Rubio. But then when it came to the debate in 2016, the gloves were off, and Jeb Bush was saying that Marco Rubio had no experience, tried to compare him to Barack Obama, who was kind of a pariah for the Republican Party in that constituency. So it's very interesting. Now you see the scenario where two hometown former allies are now really kind of going after each other.
Yeah, well, bringing it back to Donald Trump, you mentioned that you know, the candidates, a few of them at least, went after him like they hadn't in the past, and the fact that he wasn't there, and you know, he should have been, you know, defending his record and whatnot. But in my opinion, I mean, just based on the total chaos, and I don't know, it was almost juvenile in some ways. I mean, if I were Donald Trump, I'd say this even more solidifies the reason I shouldn't be here. Why should I get caught up in all this? I mean, did you kind of get that vibe also?
Not so much that would be his argument, but I think his argument is essentially, and when you're ahead, as far ahead as Donald Trump is, you can take liberties with not showing up into debate. Now, you're going to get criticized. People are going to say you're a coward, like Chris Christie did. People are going to say, why aren't you here? You don't want to take us on. But any criticism that you get will pale in comparison to him actually being there. If he was actually there, every single candidate would be going after him, and he would spend the entire time debating him. Plus, if you do that, if you show up, if you're a former president, you show up at that, if you show up into a primary debate, you're basically almost punching down because you're going to the level of other candidates, mm-hmm. and going to the level, you say, I'm a former president, now I'm debating the governor of North Dakota, so you don't necessarily look like you're on, and this is to Republican voters, you're kind of on a pedestal, you look like you're just another candidate, and they just keep going after you and after you. So I would say actually take the criticism. Usually there's a rule, by the way, in a general election. If somebody's far ahead, the candidate who's far ahead says we don't need any debates, or they'll give the opponent one courtesy debate so they can say we had the debate. The person that's down will always say, you know what, the American people, or the people of Texas, the people of Utah, the people of Arkansas, wherever, need to hear the voices. We need to have 77 debates between now and the election. And the perfect example I can think of was George W. Bush in 1998 when he had an insurmountable lead running for re-election as governor. And his opponent was the land commissioner, Gary Morrow. And Morrow kept the whole time saying, we need more debates, we need more debates, we need more debates. And finally, Bush agreed to one debate 3 weeks before the election at a Friday in El Paso, Texas, on the same night of college football. So basically, there'd be about 17 people watching. But that's generally the strategy. You give them one debate potentially. But in Donald Trump's case, he thinks he essentially can run a general election strategy, say, it's one thing if you have one opponent, if it's you against one person, but if there's 17 other people running, just say, you guys can all iron it out, and I'm, you know, I have a commanding lead right now. Why should I be there?
Yeah, and speaking of football and Trump, I mean, I had lunch yesterday with a good friend of mine, and he had a great point. He said it's kind of like the NFL Combine. If you're the number one draft pick, or you're projected to be the number one draft pick, you don't go to the NFL Combine because there's only one thing that can happen. Either you have a great showing and everybody says, yeah, well, we'll see, we already knew he was the guy, or something bad happens and then they're like, well, maybe he's not the guy. So I mean, why would you even put yourself in that situation if you're ahead that far and you are the number one pick, so to speak? So, I mean, I don't think, I don't, I don't know. I don't think there's any reason for him to go. Now, getting back to the guys that were there, some of the people, I was kind of, you know, I was waiting for certain people to have more of a breakout. To me, Christie just came across as a bully like he had in the past. But, I mean, Burgum, I mean, I kind of expected more from him. I mean, you mentioned last time he'd hurt his ankle and he was a little quiet maybe because of that. But he just didn't seem to break out of the pack. Do you think it's time for him to maybe give it up?
No. Well, I mean, I think he sees himself, first of all, my guess is he's probably looking at, say, what Bill Clinton did in 92 when a small state governor kind of came out of nowhere and won the nomination. So there is precedent for that. But this time around, I think he almost was too eager. He kind of interrupted at the beginning and started talking. And, I mean, this is really kind of the last-ditch effort for him because he barely made it into the second debate. And he wants to make it in the third debate. And he saw his former fellow, I guess, former small state governor Asa Hutchinson not making this debate. But he really needed some sort of a breakthrough. He needed some sort of a Hail Mary. He did not have that Hail Mary. I don't see where he's going to garner enough support to get into that third debate. But that being said, if you look at the polls actually in New Hampshire, where he's spending a lot of time and he's advertising in New Hampshire, and certainly he's a billionaire, so he has plenty of money. He's actually showing up at about 4 or 5% in New Hampshire. So theoretically, it's a possibility that he doesn't play in Iowa, that he goes to New Hampshire and he comes in potentially third or fourth place. Then he can continue in on the process. But I don't necessarily see people giving him a lot of money, and I don't see what his specific, you know, what his kind of the rationale for his candidacy that other candidates don't have, other than the fact that he can say, I've cut taxes more than any governor in North Dakota history. He can say, I've signed the abortion ban after 12 weeks. And he can say that I've essentially, that I'm an energy state governor. I'm an entrepreneur. He can say that, but it's kind of falling on deaf ears, in part also because he doesn't seem to be attacking anybody. He gives his statement, he'll talk, but he's not necessarily attacking anybody, so no one attacks him. So consequently, he gets very little airtime. He's almost a non-entity in the race so far, but you know he's certainly ambitious, and maybe. But then again, maybe he's only running for agriculture secretary or something just to get name recognition anyway. So who knows?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you know, speaking of entrepreneurs, we had Vivek, of course, that you know, the new kid on the block, and he brought up that whole story about appealing to the younger voters with TikTok, and Nikki Haley immediately jumped on it for that, saying, "Well, that's all China-based, and you know they're collecting your information." But at the same time, I mean, I think you do have to go after that base. Do you think that comment hurt him? I don't think it did.
No, I don't think it hurt him at all. And he does have a point. And this is where it's interesting because he is somebody who's campaigning in non-traditional areas. He's gone to inner cities, for example, where Republicans rarely go except for taps to make one appearance. He's been going to those places, been campaigning certainly with younger voters. But he says, and he's interesting, and I don't see where this rationale comes from. He says that if he gets the nomination, he's going to have the biggest landslide of any president since Ronald Reagan in 1984. Or Ronald Reagan, I don't see in a country as bifurcated as we are right now, and we are very much divided, how any candidate can win an election that's not going to be close. Whoever the Republican and Democrats put up this time, I think it's going to probably come down to, you know, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and a few states. Again, it's going to be a very close election, but he seems to have, it's almost a supercilious nature in that he says that, you know, I'm going to get the nomination. It's going to win in a landslide. I would like to see somebody ask, how exactly is this going to happen? And how are all these young voters, they may listen to you. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to vote for you or that they're necessarily going to vote at all. The other thing that's interesting about him is he continues to praise Donald Trump, but say that essentially I'm just a new generation. I'm just a new generation for the mega crowd, but I think most people that were Trump supporters in the last two elections, the mega people, I can't see them abandoning Donald Trump for somebody else just because of their age. Now maybe, and he could be playing the long game. He's only 38 years old, so he certainly could do this. He may be positioning himself for 2028, and then theoretically, whether Trump wins or loses, he would be in this time around by 2028. He wants to be the heir of the mega constituency for that election. That's why he's being trading very lately and very rarely going after Donald Trump.
What in the heck are the Democrats going to do? I mean, I don't see. I'm just going to let you answer this. I don't know what are they going to do.
I think right now it's hard to see a scenario where it's not Joe Biden. I mean. Right now, and the reason you see, for example, Gavin Newsom acting as a surrogate, going on Fox News, going on CNN, going everywhere, arguing for Joe Biden. Now, obviously, there's a possibility that a lot of people think that there's going to be some sort of a health scare and he'll be the kind of the natural person that Democrats will go to, and that's possible. But I also think that he realizes that it's best for him to be a good soldier this time around, and then as opposed to challenging Biden in 2024, because if he does that, and if Biden barely beats him, then loses the presidency, people are going to blame him for splitting the party, for dividing the party in the primary, and he doesn't have any political future whatsoever. That's true with Governor Cooper in North Carolina. That's true with Governor Whitmore in Michigan. They may be better candidates than Biden in the general election, but they realize that they're not going to divide the party. The establishment says, we just want somebody other than Donald Trump, but we want to unify amongst one candidate. So that's why you don't see any politician, not obviously Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but they're not politicians, but you don't see any office holder right now even considering challenging Joe Biden, with one exception, and that's Congressman Dean Phillips of Minnesota. And what Dean Phillips is actually thinking and where he's going to get any name recognition, I don't necessarily see right now, but he might just be positioning himself for something else. I don't know.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time, but let's go to my favorite part of talking with you, and that's what might happen that we haven't even thought about yet. Do you see something down the road that may transpire, either somebody that we haven't heard from yet or some surprises we may not have thought of yet? I mean, what's going to happen that we don't that's not on the newswire right now, or on the radar, rather?
Yeah, that's interesting. There are some that want Governor Glenn Youngkins, who just got elected governor of Virginia, to run. He says he's not going to run. He's going to put all of his focus right now, at least his electoral focus, on getting Republicans elected to the state legislature in the off-year election. But that's November, and theoretically there could be a draft movement for him toward the end of the campaign. I can see that scenario, or maybe even have him come get it. Maybe even if there's somewhat of a divide in the party, maybe even have him come in later. He'd be somebody that potentially I think could galvanize support from a little bit of the kind of soft mega crowd, if you will, and the establishment of the Republican Party. But generally, I think the field is pretty much set. On the Democratic side, I do think right now that it would be interesting to see what happens in Hampshire, because Joe Biden has basically changed the calendar. He supported changing it so that South Carolina would come first. But the state of New Hampshire has a law that states that it has to have a primary prior to any other state in the country. So they're still going to have their primary. Now, what's going to happen is the Democratic Party is not going to recognize the delegates in New Hampshire. So New Hampshire has the primary. Then once you go to the convention, New Hampshire delegates do not actually count. But you know what? The number of delegates New Hampshire has compared to, say, Florida, Texas, California is de minimis. It's almost nothing. So theoretically, what you could see here is you could see a scenario where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. overperforms in New Hampshire and garners a lot of media attention the next day. I don't think he'll go any further after that, but if he overperforms in New Hampshire, people are going to say, you know, why did he get so many votes in the state of New Hampshire? But then again, Joe Biden's not on the ballot, but he would go out and he would declare it a victory the way Bill Clinton did when he came in second in New Hampshire, even though Paul Tsongas won back in 1992. So that is something I do find interesting. Obviously, the reason Biden did it in part was because South Carolina was the state that saved him last time. He came in fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire. Then he spent all his marbles in South Carolina, won, and landed up winning the nomination. Now, this time around, he's awarding South Carolina by giving it essentially first in the nation primary status for the Democrats, not the Republicans, for the Democrats.
Okay, my friend. I tell you what, it's always a wealth of knowledge when we have you on, and I know we're going to be talking with you even more as we get closer and closer to 24. So anything else going on that you want to plug on here? Any new books that are coming out, or how can people get in touch with you and get the books that are out there?
Nope. Yep. The last book was The Great American Political Trivia Challenge, Political Trivia on Steroids. And I'm doing a lot of interviews. I was on Newsmax yesterday, and I was on News Nation the day before. So I'm kind of giving the historical analysis now.
Yeah, and I always appreciate it. You always make it a point with those other places that you say The Right Mind Show with Todd and Joey, that's still my favorite show. So we really appreciate that.
Yes, it's essentially the greatest show in the history of the human race.
Thank you. It's a new bumper sticker. And so, you know,
that should be.
It's got your face on it. Well, Rich, along with making me feel good for 30 seconds here, maybe longer, I want to thank you. And we look forward to next time, okay?
Sounds awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, buddy. That is Rich Rubino, the official political analyst commentator of The Right Mind Show. That's something, Joey, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that we are so lucky to have him.
Yes, we are.
And Newsmax can take our scraps, I guess. I don't know.
But he made it a point. He said that we are his favorite show, and he's that's why. I don't think he has the title of official political commentator with those places as like he does here. But you know, we're talking about the debate. You know, somebody's got to come in because, you know, everything just seems so broken in our country right now. And you know what I think of when things are broken, Joey?
What do you think of?
I think of getting them fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And when I want something fixed, especially around the house, that's not something I'm going to do. I'm going to get an expert. You know that? I'm going to get an expert like Rick Bernstein at the Bernstein Remodelers. If you've got something broken or you need it fixed, or you don't want, even if you need something built, if you need a new addition or something approved upon in your house, whether a new deck or, I don't know, a room addition, or even, I'm going to go ahead and say it, a wall relocated, because he makes it a point. When it comes to relocated walls, he's the guy to do it. You got to call my buddy Rick at the Bernstein Remodelers. Along with home improvements, they also do electrical and plumbing work. I've known him, as I've mentioned several times, for over 20 years. The people that work with him are master craftsmen that he has personally selected and made sure that they're properly trained, and they're all very, very polite. So if you have something you need improved or fixed around the house, I urge you to call my buddy Rick Bernstein at the Bernstein Remodelers. He is at 314-324-3024. That's 314-324-3024. And when we come back, we're going to be doing spooky stuff with an official ghost hunter right here on The Right Mind Show. I'm Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joey B. We'll be right back after Mitch takes it away.
Coming up next on The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, ghost hunter Rick McKelvey tries to scare us stupid. Wait until he finds out we can't get any stupider. Welcome back to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on News Talk STL. And now a man so good at hosting, he's rated 4.7 stars on Airbnb, Todd Showalter.
And we're back on Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joey V and The Right Mind Show. On the line with me now is a ghost hunter, everybody, Rick McKelvey. How you doing, Rick? Tell us what it is about you that involves ghosts and how you go about tracking them.
Back in about 2008... I started a group. I've been doing this for about 15 years now. Before that, I was sick. I didn't believe any more than the next guy that they were real.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't until it starts happening to you. So I had a few experiences before that, which triggered me to start this group. And we've been traveling. I don't know. We've been to everything all around Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, New York, West Virginia, Florida.
As far as looking for ghosts, but you say something, there was something that transpired that kind of pushed you in this direction. What actually happened that made you want to do this?
Well, I sent you a picture a while back to show you that. That was the start of it.
Okay, and it was a picture of somebody in a window. Now, what happened?
Yes, that was at an old train station in Olmsted Falls, Ohio. And I was doing advertising, taking some pictures, didn't see anything. Our person never saw anything. And when I took it back to the customer to show them their final edit before airing, and here, it looked to me looked like a curtain blowing out. I was still a skeptic at the time. I you know, it's curtain blowing out. And they said, no, that window's nailed shut. There's no curtain. They showed me. It was like they said. And under a closer of observation of it, you could see that it was someone standing there in a clan of uniform, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
And what we found out from the history, back in 1850 when Lincoln freed the slaves, one of the first places the Klan started in Ohio was in Olmsted Falls, where this location was.
Wow. Okay.
And that kind of got started. Then I actually moved into a couple of haunted houses, not knowing that. The first one was my parents' house. It wasn't like that growing up, but moving back there while I was waiting for a home to close with my wife, it was pretty active. And no one really seems to know why that happens and what triggers it when no one's died in the house. You really don't know. It just, you never know when this is going to happen.
So, okay, now wait a minute. So you, this was a house that you had known before. So you mentioned that you moved into these homes. Now, and what, just occurrences would happen? So you'd all of a sudden, I mean, what normally, I mean, you were never bothered before, and all of a sudden you started seeing ghosts in these homes?
Exactly. It was my father had passed. My mother was there. We were seeing everything from shadows of what looked like dogs, animals crossing through. We were seeing servicemen in all the way back into, like, say, the MASH time, Korean War uniforms to people in modern clothes. And the only thing we could determine from that was my mother had some sort of ability that she wasn't aware of. And what we know about this is when you have an ability, they seem to come find you because they know you can see them. So we don't really know, I mean, how that, my mother ended up moving out of there and we ended up moving too, but then we moved right into another one. We had a century home.
With your mom? I mean, and so she's kind of like bringing this all along with her. I mean, so she was with you at the second place?
No, not at first. She ended up getting Alzheimer's, but she did move us for a while. But no, the second place was a century home, and nothing was happening until I decided to remodel. They don't like to have the house remodeled. It kind of stirs things up. They like things as it is. Everything as minor as painting can stir them up. And we were having all kinds of noises and disturbances. My wife was trying to call me one time on my way home from work, and she said, someone broke in. They're smashing stuff downstairs. And I go, and nothing's out of place. Then there's a knock on the door, and it's the whole North Ridgeville Police Department. So they got a call about a break-in, which my wife called.
Wow.
And then I proceeded to hear noises in my empty basement. I sound like boxes being thrown around, and I sat there for a couple of weeks just listening. And then somebody said, get a voice recorder. This is kind of what started it for me. I got a little digital recorder, and I got it going and asking questions, and nothing was happening. And then finally, in a real creepy voice, I got, this is my house.
Wow. So do you have that recording? Do you have that?
Yeah, I do somewhere, but not it's on my computer.
Okay. So actually, it was a person spoke to you.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, and my reply when I heard that, I had to run through some software that I had on my computer to, you know, clean it up and listen to it. And I just said to him, I said, listen, this might have been your house back in the day, but see, now I'm paying the mortgage on it.
Oh, yeah.
So you're welcome to stay here, but you got to quit tapping people on the shoulders and slamming doors and stirring the dog up, and all that nonsense has got to stop.
Yeah.
And it kind of did a little bit, but we actually saw him. We saw him walking through the house.
Really? What did he look like?
He was wearing the Victorian 1800s clothes. We found out our house, which was all stone and brick. It was kind of a mansion for its time. And it got moved because when they put in the Ohio Turnpike, they moved our house down the road, which this guy still owned it. And I guess he had a lot of money back in the day. And they rolled it down the street on logs. About 1,000 feet, and someone up the road actually filmed it on 8mm or something. We got our hands on it. We got it put onto a CD and we watched it. And this was the guy in our house. He walked alongside them as they pulled the house down the road with horses and that.
Wow.
It was a craziest thing. Yeah.
Okay. So you got a group together and you decided, okay, we're going to have like a club and we're going to go find you. It's kind of like Ghostbusters type thing. So you go around the country now and you look for other places that have been haunted. I mean, how do they, I mean, is that what you call it? Do you call it haunted or you call it like ghost inhabited or something like that? I got to use the right
terminology. No, it's haunted locations. It's haunted locations. Okay. You know, back in the day, this started back, the first people to ever do this were Ed and Lorraine Warren. They're the ones that were behind the Conjuring movies and all that, and Annabelle and all that.
Okay.
They were the pioneers of this. They got all this started, and everybody laughed at them back in the day. Now it's more of a, everybody's kind of, they're watching the shows, they're kind of into it, everybody wants to go, everybody wants to try it, and yeah, so we got a group, basically a big group, just to help finance to go on these trips because these places don't let you in for free. You've got to pay.
Okay.
They all have a fee. And we get it just ourselves. We're a private group. we don't do public things where there's anyone else but us there. So when stuff's happening, it's happening. It's not somebody else making that noise or whatever's happening.
Okay. Now, you got people out there that would say, oh, come on, this is like silly. This doesn't really happen. What would you tell some of these skeptics aside from just like, hey, look at this photo or listen to this? I mean, because we are going to have skeptics out there. What would you say to those people?
I was one too. I was probably a diehard skeptic until it started happening to me. And when things happen and you can't explain it, then you got to kind of look at, okay, why is this happening? We help people at their homes that call us too sometimes. And first thing we do, get in there, we try and debunk it. We try and find the branch that's scratching on the side of the house or the rats that are in the attic or, you know, we try and do all that first to find out if they really have something going on. And 99% of those cases are, we can find out what the deal is. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you just don't know.
Wow.
Can't explain it.
So how long have you been doing this now? How many years do you say?
About 15 years.
Okay, 15 years. Out of all that, if you had to pick one, it'd just be like, wow, this one really freaked us out. What was the top one? I mean, what really blew your mind?
There's been a lot, but we just went on one in July. It's called Waverly Hills Sanatorium. It's in Louisville, Kentucky. Very hard to get in. That's another one. It's about $1,100 for your group. But we had it 8 hours to ourselves. This one, if you're into this kind of thing, this is the holy grail of haunted locations. It was a place they sent you back in the day when tuberculosis was a big thing. They pretty much sent you there to die. Your family kind of disowned you. They didn't want to get it, so they just left you there. And as the records go, about 60,000 died there. So there's quite a bit of activity there. This last time we went, there was actually, they have a thing called the death tunnel, where they actually, it's a concrete ramp that goes about 500 feet with stairs alongside it. And that's the way they used to take the bodies out daily. And it goes so far away from the building that the other people that were there, they called them inmates back then. They couldn't see people being wheeled out, you know, being loaded into hearses. So it kept their spirits high, I guess. And we were down there. We just got our equipment put up, you know, in one area. They were giving us the walkthrough, showing us all the hot spots and all that. And we're in the death tunnel. And we're standing at the top, and there's 15 of us. And we could literally see a blue light. Looked like somebody was carrying a lantern up these stairs coming right towards us. And you could see how it was swinging as they were taking steps. They were telling us about that. And this is pitch black, too. They were telling us about that. And, you know, sure enough, we weren't there 5 minutes and it started happening. We watched it come within 30 feet of us.
Wow.
Then it just vanished.
Did you take pictures?
We didn't have any equipment with us.
Oh. Okay.
We set it all in an offsite area. They were giving us the walkthrough. All these places give you a walkthrough.
Okay.
Where they kind of give you the hot spots and where to go and everything. And so we didn't have anything. So we came back there later, and of course it didn't happen. We were there another time where something came into my wife and just dropped her to her knees. We had to get her out of the building. That happens sometimes too.
Wow.
Sometimes they want your energy to try and manifest or do whatever they want to do.
Okay. Well, this is like some crazy stuff. Now, you mentioned that you've got this group, but you're going to be starting your own podcast, or you're going to try to put one together. Have you thought that out?
Yeah,
I mean, what's the name of it, and what are your plans for that?
Well, our group is called Portals, but if anybody looking us up on Facebook, you have to actually spell it out because someone else got the Portals name before I did. But if you put in it's going to be Paranormal Ohio Research Team Afterlife Society, which comes to be Portals.
Well, that's easy to remember.
Okay. And if someone's looking it up, you know, you can see there's a shadow figure on the emblem for a page. But
okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this, you know, having like a thing, not quite like, I don't know if you're ever familiar with Coast to Coast, Art Bell and them at night.
Mm-hmm, I sure am.
It's probably not going to be that far out like they are. I mean, I, you know, I'm into the paranormal and all that, but that kind of stuff, some of that is news to me.
Okay.
I've never heard something that they talk about, but I'm looking to have something like that. Something to, you know, talk about it and people's experiences and, you know, good locations to go to. And,
yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, so I tell you what, when you have it put together, get in touch with me and we'll have you back on the show to plug it and we'll talk a little bit about it. And, you know, it sounds like really cheesy, but it'd be great to have you back around Halloween because, you know, that's kind of like, you know, people do that. And, well, I guess we are too. But would you come back?
There's a possibility that we're going to be going to visit a school before then. And it's, from what I understand about the history of it, it's like a Freddy Krueger type of thing. It was a janitor in the boiler room. Okay. And so, it's supposed to be extremely haunted. It's real close to my house, too. It's about 10 minutes from here. So we're trying to get in there. So maybe I'll have something by then.
Well, I got to tell you, Rick, because we have like an official political correspondent and a weatherman and a carnival barker and stuff like that. But we do not have an official Right Mind ghost hunter. So will you be that guy?
Sure.
Fantastic. Well, you get like a T-shirt and like a lapel pin and all of our expired parking tickets and stuff like that. So it's a really good deal, but I'm kidding. Yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Rick. It's been great. I appreciate you being on the show. We'll be, checking in with you soon. And we will, we'll look for the podcast. And I want to hear some more of these ghost stories. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of them. It's just amazing, all the stuff. I mean... Okay. But yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
You too. That's Rick McKelvey. He's a ghost hunter, and that's some really crazy stuff, isn't it, Joey?
Did you recall what he said, that ghosts do not like it when your house is being remodeled?
I know that, and we just, that's why.
Our friend Rick Bernstein can put /Ghostbuster on the end of his business card.
Yes, he could do that.
I know we already did the livery. Don't get excited, Rick. You're not getting two. But
he's probably going to come running over here. He's going to say, can we do this today? Because, I mean, can you redo the spot for me so that you can say I'm a professional ghost hunter or something? Remodeler? What do we say? I don't know. Okay. Well, it was a great segment. And when we come back, if we do come back, if we're not like, off in a haunted zone by then, we're going to be talking to the king of coffee, King Kirby, from DiscountCoffee.com. I'm Todd Showalter, along with my buddy Joey V. You're listening to The Right Mind Show. We'll be right back.
Coming up next on The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, King Kirby from DiscountCoffee.com put some pep in our step. Welcome back to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on Newstalk STL. And now a man who smells so good he caused Chanel to drop a position down to sixth place, Todd Showalter.
And welcome back. I'm Todd Showalter, along with my buddy Joey V in The Right Mind Show. And now you know what that triumph of music means. We have on the line with us now the king of coffee from the coffee kingdom, King Kirby from DiscountCoffee.com. How's it going, King?
King Kirby, DiscountCoffee.com kingdom.
That's right.
We didn't give the kingdom away last week, Todd.
I know. We're going to talk about that because you said you got a hold of me and you said, look, Todd, and you say, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. I'm the king here and I'm putting all this responsibility on you. I'm basically giving the kingdom away. I'm offering up to 30% off this week anything anyone orders. And you said a lot of people didn't take advantage of it. Now, I have a theory behind that because I think maybe people thought it was a joke. They thought it was too good to be true. Okay. Now, was it too good to be true?
It wasn't April Fool's Day, Todd. Okay.
I know.
The king is sad.
I know you sound sad. And we got to cheer the king up. We got to cheer the king up because, the last thing we want is a sad kingdom and a sad king in the kingdom, okay? So now I'm just going to reiterate what we said last week. You mentioned that anybody that goes to discountcoffee.com and sees all of the stuff that you have on there, different coffees, cappuccinos, break room supplies, snacks, everything, it didn't matter, okay? If you went on there and ordered, even with other promotions, you were going to get an additional 30% off, which is basically just giving it away. I mean, I thought you were being way overly generous. But again, you said people just thought, wow, this is just too good to be true. But it's not. It's really the real deal, correct?
Correct. And what got this all started is normally, Right Mind listeners get 15% off if they go to the checkout at discountcoffee.com.
Right.
And then last week, especially Saturday evening, we suggested that when you go to the church tomorrow, see where the church gets their coffee supplies. Because many times churches are paying way more from the local coffee service and so forth.
Right.
And we do have discount coffee customers that make donations to their local church.
Right.
But the Right Mind audience either is atheist. Ooh. You think they're atheists, Todd?
Yes. Or they don't go to school.
The king is so sad.
I know.
Do you think if we extended the king would be happy next week?
Here's what I think is going to happen. I'm going to make this promise to you. We're going to offer that 30% off, okay, if you put in Right Mind in the promo code, okay, for anything that you offer, even if there are discounts, at discountcoffee.com. And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to come over there and tickle you, okay, because I know how you like to be tickled, a belly tickle. And so I'm going to do that. But first, we're going to offer the 30% off. Does that sound okay?
All right, Todd.
Okay.
I want to remind
Joey's here. He's jumping around in the background. I'm sorry. Yes.
I want to remind these listeners, if that's what they call themselves, that they are sick in the head for not taking advantage of this. And actually on discountcoffee.com, you can get ibuprofen and aspirin and first aid kits.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Cure that sick in the headness.
Joey's like a marketing genius. You know,
How did you know that, Joey?
Well, I went to discountcoffee.com and the tab that says, don't you dare click here. It's secret.
Yeah.
I clicked that one. And then it came up with the allergy pills and the sinus and the cough drops and the tissues.
We'll see next week if the king is happy or not.
I know. You sound sad.
Do you know how the king got hurt? He was thrown. Now that is a play on words.
Did you see what Joey did there?
Moonwalking out the door.
He just walked out the door.
I think I'm getting a headache. I gotta go. I got a headache.
I'll see you, King. Okay. Bye bye.
All right.
That's
the king. It's great having him.
Bye bye. That was King Kirby from discountcoffee.com. He seems so sad, Joey.
I'm thinking when we have our ghost hunter back,
yes,
we could also have King Kirby talk about how you can be the bell of the ball. I don't know if that's the right term for Halloween, because they have candies and cookies on there.
They do. They
you
have
could
it all.
Stock up all the best cookies that any kid has ever received and drop them in the little trick or treat boxes.
If they do it this week, they're going to get 30% off.
Get there in time, for Halloween.
30% off. That's a pretty good deal. I think that's more than 10%, isn't it?
It's almost double.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Math was.
We'll have to have
specialty.
Rich Rabino on to tell us about the polling numbers of 30% off. People don't like it overwhelmingly.
Well, he said he was sad. You know who else is sad?
Who's that?
Admiral Andy. He said he's having a hard time with his studies. Maybe we should check in on him and see how Admiral Andy is doing.
Hello, sir.
Admiral Andy, we had to call you because I got to tell you what happened. We had King Kirby from discountcoffee.com on, and he's sad today. And I said, well, I know somebody else that's sad, and that's the Admiral, because they have him studying the socialist material and all this stuff, and it's really starting to bum him out a little bit. Is that the case?
This is true, believe it or not.
So you're not enjoying this whole indoctrination to become a Marxist socialist then. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I guess I'm already institutionalized as it is.
Okay. All right. Well, what is it that's got you so down? Because you just said you couldn't come in. You've got your face in the book. Which is the book of the official indoctrination of the Admiral Andy. What is it that you're studying that's just so painful?
Oh gosh, it's all the social economic statuses and the woe's me and the poor, and it's just my brain is fried right now.
My goodness, Joey, can you believe the depression we have on this show? What are we going to do? We got Admiral Andy, we've got King Kirby. Everybody is sad. I think it's time for us to do our karaoke and cheer everybody up a little bit.
He's trying to become a counselor, right, to help other veterans?
Yes, which is kind of ironic. Because
now he needs the counselor.
He's depressed, and he's going to be a counselor. Hey, Joey, have you noticed it sounds like he's kind of in a closet or something right now? You're not in your cry room, are you? Are you in a safe space or something?
No. Actually, I stopped to get a little bit of lunch, so I'm upstairs in my kitchen.
Are you going to stick it out, Andy, or are you going to drop out? Are you going to make it through this class?
There's nothing wrong with dropping out, you know.
Does the government take all their money back?
They take our money back.
Yeah, actually, they do. But all I have to say is power to the people.
Power to the people. Okay, because by the way, in case they missed it, we are the United States taxpayers out there, all of us. We're paying for Admiral Andy to become a Marxist socialist. So we want our money to go to good, okay?
If the government shuts down, you have to stay home from school and watch Prices Right.
You're right. right. And grandma will come over and make you a grilled cheese sandwich. Yeah.
With some tomato soup.
Did we cheer you up, Adam Landy?
You did. Thank you, gents. Okay. I really appreciate it.
That's what Speaking we did. Of the kitchen table, make sure you subscribe to Nothing Off the Table podcast.
Oh,
Nothing.
That's right. That was a nice plug there because Joey is just full of the marketing nuggets here today. And so he did put that out there because you do have a podcast, the Nothing's Off the Table podcast. And it's getting really, really good. It's always been good, but now you're getting like better than our show. So I didn't want to, blow it up too big. Otherwise, I'll be out there, selling monkeys on the corner again.
All right, fellas, thanks for calling. Love y'all. We'll see you.
Don't study too hard. Just go join some clubs or something like that, I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank you for joining me. I'm Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joey V. And you've been listening to The Right Mind Show. And like I always say, remember, if you don't have a right mind, you don't have a mind at all. Till next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. To find out about all things Todd, go to studiotodd.com. We will see you next Saturday night at 5 p.m. right here on 101.9 94.1 Newstalk STL and always streaming online at newstalkstl.com.